What's been the worst thing about getting a hit single?
So we haven't really had one that long, really. And you know, we found out it was number 5 when we were in Germany. So I think the worst thing so far has been the lack of time to do everything that we're meant to be doing. You know, but that was only yesterday, really. You know, arriving at about 6 o'clock, and then you were arriving, and the girl from NME, and the radio interview, and the gig all in one. And all you're trying to think of really is playing the gig. But I can't see any major drawbacks so far.
Well, what was your first reaction?
Well, it was great, really. But there again, this was like 7 o'clock in the morning. We had to fly to Germany. We found out in Holland at about 9:30. We were changing planes. It was funny. It was like the flight numbers we were looking at, and then we had the chart position. It's the RCA had phoned KLM flight this. I don't know, really. I'm so into sort of what we're doing, and I was telling you, you know, chance of working with different people and having our studio, that this is just like another side effect to it. But it isn't really going to alter what we're doing, really. You know, we're not going to go now recording like a bigger and better studio, which was a trap that, you know, I've been in before. Now we're recording Montserrat. Now we, right. Do you know what I mean? And which doesn't make any difference to the sound of things, really. I think we just took it in our stride, really.
Were you surprised?
Well, I think we knew that something was coming, you know. There was a slow build-up. When Love Is a Stranger wasn't the hit, but everybody kept saying it should have been hit by DJs and general public that we met. We were expecting that this was going to, you know, have some kind of reaction as well. Yeah, I'm really surprised it's number 5. I thought it might get in the top 30, but surprised it got in the top 10 so quickly, you know. It's 3 weeks or something. And it was like something like 62, something like, was it after that? 32, 21 and 5. It's pretty good.
Do you think it'll make things easier, or will it bring more headaches?
I think in some ways it's quite nice to be, to not have hit records and to be obscure in a way, you know, to the general public, because you don't have so much pressure on, and you can, you know, we used to go in the studio and make all these kind of mad tapes and put 4 tracks out on the B-side and mess around, and it was a lot more orientated towards having a great time in the studio. What we have to stop now is to stop people getting to us, to keep making us do all these things that take away from that.
Won't you get on the treadmill?
Why?
Won't you get on the treadmill?
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what we have to stop now. You see,
well,
because now we know what's going to happen, because we went through it before. So before things start to happen, we can say, well, listen, in 2 months' time, you know, we're definitely not doing this, 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 or this, or this, no matter what you say, which we've already said. And
do they think they can get around you now?
No, because I think they agree this time. Because I think we've explained it, you know, that thing about how you lose track of what you're doing and everything, and you end up doing one great album and then 3 bummers, do you know what I mean? A lot of groups, I think, get into a trap of doing like an album that's like an ultimate album, and the rest of the time they're hearing all over the world promoting this and trying to record another one in between, and the other one just sounds like it's been recorded in between, you know what I mean? It hasn't. The recording's probably great and the playing's great because they're all tight, but the actual songs, yeah, and the feeling behind it is different. So I think after we've done this tour and this stint of interviews and things, I think we'd probably get back to where we were before.
Crouching.
In the church, yeah.
But I mean, when the single started going up, did you have a sort of feeling of dread, of foreboding, sort of, oh God,
yeah,
we're going to have to go through this routine again?
Yeah, I did actually. I mean, I don't know about Annie. I did. I thought, oh, now, because you just know what's coming next. It's going to be like, you know, the and the razzmatazz and this and that, and it's a good laugh, you know, the first time you do it, and you can still have good fun sometimes, but sometimes you're just harking to be in your own private inventive space as opposed to in the public kind of acting out, you know, their idea of what the pop song should be, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Have you got plans for a new single?
Yeah, Annie and I, see, it started already with people in the record company saying, well, you know, I've got to release another track off the album and this and that. And we feel we released the singles off the album just because they didn't go in the charts. you know, like The Walk.
Right.
And This Is The Hair Song, It's A Stranger, were all singles off this album. The reason we did have more tracks on for the album, but we kept those ones on because we thought, well, we've released them as a single and they're probably sold about three and nobody's really heard them anyway, but we still think they're really good, so, you know, we could have took them off because they'd been singles and put others. In fact, instead we gave away a free cassette. Well, there's a free cassette going to be given away. And all these B-sides of the 12 inches, we used to just stick on ones we weren't putting on the album. And, sorry, what was the question?
The new single.
Oh, yeah, so we have an idea of this new song that we want to do. That's, we're really touring around and we desperately want to go in the church to record this track so we can say, well, look, this is what the new single is. But we'd already booked the tour and, you know, it's going to go on for the next four weeks before we can get in there. So we're busy saying, well, look, hold everything, you know, we want to wait till we get in there to do this. But then again, you see, already it started. Now we've got in 4 weeks' time. We've got to go in and do this.
Yeah.
But will we? I'm sure we'll get that back to normal again.
Does that church seem like a sanctuary?
Yeah, it does. It's remarkable. I mean, you only came in that little front room, which was where we were in while it was being decorated.
Yeah, but you showed me the
big... Yeah, I mean, it's amazing because it's psychological as well, because you have to go through four doors. You know, it's like this big door, and then there's another door, then you go outside to a mini courtyard, and then another door. And it's like nobody can get in there, you know what I mean? And it's great. You know, you can have friends and, you know, just mates, you know, around the corner can say, do you want to come in and do something? Not for release, just to mess around.
Yeah.
That's the important thing, you know, because I think you often get into a trap where everything you're doing, you're thinking, well, is this the single? Has it got to be released? That's what used to happen.
Yeah.
Like a management company would be there going, well, it doesn't sound like a single, and you think, well, fucking hell. I'm just trying, you know, make music. Well, we can do that now, and nobody need even hear it. There's only us, you know, we're managing ourselves. And if we don't think it's what we want to release, then we'll just make cassettes and send it to our mates and that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Keep it like that, and then choose the album gradually. That's what we did with this album, you know. We had so much stuff, and we were just adding a track once every 3 weeks that we thought, oh, this would fit with that album. But we actually had parallel albums going on that we'd sort of made other tracks that didn't fit with this album, but that had more of that feeling, you know.
Do you work quickly?
I work amazingly quickly, and Annie works more. See, she's a lot more, selective about her actual lyrics and things. I mean, she'll spend like a week or 2 weeks just on like four lines, you know, like for Love Is a Stranger, for instance. And, whereas I tend to, like, have, you know, 12 tracks, literally, in one day, you know, written, backing tracks, bits of melodies and words scattered around. But that's our personalities, and when my flat is like that, my flat is like complete stuff all over the floor and tapes hanging out of cupboards. And Annie's is very kind of precise, you know.
How do you put stuff together then?
Well, it works well in that if we were both like me, you know, we'd have like 1,000 unfinished songs, and if we were both like Annie, we'd probably have like one single every 2 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it works great because I have to really limit what I give to Annie because she can also get confused just with all this stuff. So I think I select a couple of tracks that I've been doing, and she selects her favourite things she's been writing, and we sort of meet. It's weird. It works great because we all almost meet like strangers. It's really tense when we're playing each other things. And, you know, we'll argue like mad about things and everything. And then
you're very protective about what you've each worked on.
Yeah.
I mean, if the other doesn't like it.
Well, luckily what we do is, with this working with other people, I'm not too concerned, she isn't, because we have other sort of ways of getting out of our system, something else we wanted to do. But we nearly always agree. In the final sense, you know, it's like, oh, that's definitely Eurythmics. This is definitely like.
Yeah, how can you tell?
I don't know. It's just something about the sound.
What if you went off and recorded, say, I mean, just you and Green recorded something, or you recorded something without, you know, and then Annie says, well, you know, it should have been a Eurythmics song. Like, no, it's a great tune.
Yeah. Well, that's happened before. I mean, it's happened before, but it. It doesn't really make any difference because, you know, we're not in any kind of loft fighting over, you know, songs and timescale. when I've written some. You see, you can't stop yourself spontaneously in the middle of doing something and going, hang on, sorry, I'm not writing this with you anymore.
Right.
And, you know, I've written things with other people, I suggested things. And Annie said, oh, bloody hell, what did you suggest that for? You know, like, not just music, you know, videos or ideas of certain things. But I mean, I'm sure other groups do it too, and, you know, it's inspiring as well, because, you know, you learn things. Annie just recorded something. She really likes Billy McKenzie, and he rang her up. It was really coincidence, because he probably didn't know she was like, and asked her to record this track with him. And she was, like, over the moon about that, you know. And she came back and played the cassette and everything, and it sounded really good, you know. And it's good for her to get away from just work with me and sing with some, like, great, you know, singer and get off on that. And for me to work with somebody completely, like, I like working with people who've never been in the studio before or never actually recorded a track before. Because in my enthusiasm of showing them how good it can be, I like get it buzzed back. It's like, I don't know, it's like a teacher at a school, I suppose, if you really like a subject and you're turning somebody on to then it sort of comes back, you know. I sort of go off on that.
Is there a sense of randomness about that as well?
Yeah,
because you don't know. That you don't know.
Yeah, they do something, right. See, I've worked with so many different lineups and things that things become a bit predictable when you have like a bass, guitar, drums. You know, they go in the studio, they already have a song worked out and they want to record it, but they want you to get the sound of what it sounds like. Well, it's completely boring, you know.
But that, I mean, yeah, it's strange that you should say that though, because That was my first impression last night at the gig. How much you've actually reverted back to that though.
On a live ironic situation, yeah. I mean, that it was more normal. Yeah, I mean, Annie and I were saying that in the hotel room. What happened was we did just before we did this tour with some tapes and Robert Crash playing.
Yes.
And we felt like frustrated because we couldn't get the feeling of a rhythm behind us to generate.
Yeah.
The songs, and that's why we went for Clem, you know, because like we really loved his drumming. He's like really inventive, and in a way we've got a sort of a standard band format which we're feeling at the moment. But the thing is, it was the only way we could translate this album on stage without being culled and with tapes. But we did feel like ourselves, you know. I mean, that's another thing that is that we're never going to keep the same situation, and the next tour might be in fact be with no drums or nothing.
Yeah,
it just depends.
Have you seen Yazoo live?
No, I've never seen them play.
I mean, a couple of people have said that they think they come across cold, but I've seen them more times now. And it strikes me as that everything is just lumps of wood and metal anyway.
Yeah.
Apart from the vocals. There's no way that Alf could ever come across as cold. I feel the same way about Eurythmics anyway, that if you were just using tapes or you were just playing, if you were just playing keyboards or bass or whatever.
The trouble is though, but Yazoo's album is a lot easier to play in that way. I mean, if you think the walk's got like a whole brass section and trumpet solos and then every different track, I've Got an Angel, so it's like a rhythm, you know. And when people come to see us and they've bought the album, you know, in a way I'd like to sort of present the album, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though it's different, I'd like to give them something. I think it would have been not a very good move to do this tour with tapes.
Right.
Even though we didn't do it last night. Sometimes we just play with a Porter Studio, Annie and I, on an encore we do like a French song with me playing guitar, and it does go down really well. I think, you know, for a whole hour of that, you might get a bit, you know. I think I would be, if I was in the audience, I like to look at it if I was in the audience, and if I was in the audience, I'd start to feel a bit, you know, like 20 minutes, I'd want something
well,
else.
I didn't really have much idea what it was going to be like, but I wondered whether you'd considered making it more sort of multimedia.
With more visual.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd like to. The trouble is, we started off with this tour losing so much money because, you know, we had Clem coming in and the single hadn't took off and everything. And we're having to borrow money to do it. That we had a limited amount of things to do. I mean, next time, if we, you know, the album really sells everything, next time we play, it'll be a lot more of an event. You know, we'd like to have more a show that is like, as you said, a multimedia event where at some point it might just be Annie sitting on a stool and a grand piano or whatever, and then it might be like a whole sort of band and dance that might be helping. The way that we sort of like things ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, we feel a bit restricted at the moment in this band format.
What you would like to go back to this tour or what?
No, I mean just on this tour, I'm feeling just like you said, that it's a bit bandish. Yeah, it feels a bit, you know, like, what can you do, you know, you get five people, they're really nice people and everybody's playing together really well, everybody's doing their thing really well, but just the fact that it is like that, you know.
Do you normally do something like that?
Sometimes.
I just, it struck me as hugely ironic, bearing in mind your Nico was...
Oh, yeah. No, we've done it before. We recorded it once for fun. We haven't really rehearsed it much. It's funny, this thing, you know, I even feel... Sometimes I play the guitar and I feel... See, really, I think we should have had another musician. Because what's happening? It's me. It's only me and Mickey playing all the music. And it's, like, really complicated. Because sometimes he's playing a part and then I have to swap up to play the bass. I think if we'd had one other person, I would rather be more affecting the sound, like in the way Eno would instruct me. I just want to have like takes, play the occasional guitar through echo effects, and the occasional synth thing, and be more like an MD, and affecting everybody's sound. You know, I like to get famous drum sound, and suddenly it's all like trebly, you know. But we haven't got enough people at the moment to do it. Still, that's one fortunate thing is that. We can, straight after this if we want to do a tour of the two of us.
Yeah.
We have made tapes, we've got a whole box of our backing tracks on a port studio, which we sometimes get out and just play.
How did you come to work with all the musicians to Clem?
Oh, well, Clem was on the first album, and I went on holiday there at his flat in New York. We talked about it then, and then when... We'd written such complicated patterns into the drum machine sometimes that we needed some drummer that live would spontaneously do these things, and he was the obvious person to think of. Then we had this friend called Matt Breton, who we had supporting us before. He's a young kid, you know, he's managed by the Funboy 3's manager, Rick Rogers. And he'd had Eddie singing with him before, and we'd seen her and we'd met her, and we saw her with the Gang of Four, and we heard her voice had a very similar trebliness to Annie's, and we needed somebody like in Sweet Dreams, the harmonies are so part of the song that would be able to do that, and there's not many people who could do. Backing vocals are different, but ones that just go ooh, you need somebody to sing, so she was the obvious choice for that. And there was like a few keyboard players that we would think, it's very difficult because when you write things with sequences and things, to get a keyboard player who can cope with sometimes having to play like a thing that's like a sequence, and on the other hand, play a brass part. You know, most keyboard players are either like bluesy keyboard players, or they're like, you know, a certain synthesized bands that can't really play, they're just doing dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. And so Mickey was one of the few people we knew who would be able to handle doing both things. But it's good, you know, for the way it is at the moment. It can get across the songs on the album, and it can sort of sing and know that there's things happening behind her and it's not going to like fall apart.
Right.
It's just very frightening sometimes with the tape. You'll be doing something and you know that if the tape stops or something, there's no human element that's keeping it going. That used to freak us out a bit, you know.